Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets, and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 181, episode 4 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It is Thursday, April 22nd, 2021. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Man, I've got starting off with a bubble here. a.k.a.
That baby's disgusting.
That is courtesy of Pick Last in Zeit Class and my three-year-old. And I'm thrilled to be joined by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Who thinks 90-day fiancé slaps? Who twists up some nice blunt raps? Me do, me do. Who smokes weed in games at night? Who lives that mofongo life? Me do, me do. All right. You know, we're talking with Stonecutters, and the Discord went off. Shout out to Hank Scipio. Hank, shout out to Rory the Scrivener for putting that one together for me. Made me
beauty.
Laugh.
Beauty.
Kind of fucked up the rhythm.
Miles, we are fortunate, thrilled, overwhelmed joined in our third seat, completely unworthy, by the brilliant, the talented Roy Wood Jr.
Hey. Well, hello.
Welcome.
Who is that with noisy child? Who has child won't shut the fuck up? Me do.
How old's your child?
He's 4. I'm being a mean father. I don't think I love him, and he's the best thing that ever happened to me. Blah, blah, blah.
Do you have those moments where you, I'm Jack as well, like where your comedy brain and your parent brain come at odds, where you're like, I can't let this lyric go, and I'm going to say something like, this pussy ass kid won't shut the fuck up, like, but I love him, but also had to do the bit.
You know why? You have to say that disclaimer at the end of a kid joke.
Right.
Because
right.
Some people, what do you mean?
Is it worth the disclaimer? Yeah.
It is, because also we're the first generation where our kids will be able to, like, there's a whole digital log of everything I've ever said about him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I don't want him to stumble across this episode and just hear me go, he won't shut the fuck up. And then he has to see a therapist.
Yeah. I was
no, like, I love you.
There's that Michael Keaton movie, My Life, where he is about to die and, like, his wife's pregnant, I think, or like they have an infant. And so he, like, records a bunch of home video. I could die now. Like, I could die and have 8 more kids and, like, they'd be fine, because they could just put together, like, they could Black Mirror a version of me with all the shit that we've recorded on this. They could totally program a robot that would
have to say we're not
all
dead.
My same thoughts. Yeah, that's a very good point, Miles.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could deep fake a robot with your face by the time your kid is right. 20.
Right.
Yeah. He'd just know me as dad on Zoom.
Yeah. And to your point about this generation of kids, like we don't, there's very few times we could present receipts to our parents about how they fucked us up. Like,
right.
Literally like, here's the fucking audio tape of what you said. And so I was like, no, you're not remembering that right. And now it's like, I was listening to episode 348 of your podcast that you used to do 40 years ago. What were you saying about me?
Our parents are literally a mystery. Like anything younger than age 6, you just, I don't fucking know. Your parents all have like 8 photos that confirm previous moments before you.
Yeah.
That's all they got for you.
Right.
And they're so good at editing the like useful memories out of like they're like, nah, that never happened actually. I don't remember that. And you were a dumb kid, so I'm gonna go with my memory over yours on that one. All right, Roy, we're gonna get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're gonna tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about. We're gonna talk about some of the Chauvin reactions yesterday, put that in a little more context and how they're criminalizing protest. We're gonna talk about whether Quibi is back. Fingers crossed.
Somehow.
We're going to talk about some new fratsicles that are hitting the market, the oldster fashion takeover that's happening. All of that, plenty more. But first, Roy, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that's revealing about who you are?
You know, I'm going to give you something even better than that. I'm going to give you my YouTube recently watched videos.
Okay.
Perfect.
I will not give you Pornhub.
Thank
but
you.
But I will give you recently watched videos. YouTube is where I go for tutorials just to learn how to do stuff. How to stop Internet Explorer from redirecting to Microsoft Edge. Helping my girl with that.
Okay. Wow. Internet Explorer.
Is Lionel Richie's girlfriend too young for him? Don't know why I clicked that, but I did.
God, they're good.
MLB 21 wrote to the show. I just bought that, so I watch all of the gamers play the game that I'm about to play, so I have a little bit more familiarity about that. A gang of black women comedians. I'm starting to get back out on the road, so I'm trying to figure out who's funny out there, and you know, get to working with some new people. I like new faces.
Absolutely.
On the road with me. It's how I stay fresh. The Bee Gees, You Should Be Dancing, 1976 version, high quality audio.
Damn, that's eclectic. It's not like a single thread that you're following through there. That's like
your day.
I could screen grab this. The YouTube video I listened to right after the Bee Gees, 3-6 Mafia popping my collar instrumental.
The instrumental.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, I am deep into hip hop instrumentals, especially South shit from the 90s, because I'm from Alabama. So that's like the soundtrack of my childhood, bro.
I mean, so were you just, you put the beat on and you gave yourself your own, never since I can't remember, I've been popping my collar, so good.
When you hear hip hop instrumentals, that's when you really start appreciating the little nuances in production. To me, Manny Fresh is the master of random laser.
Right.
Like just weird pum-pum shit happening underneath the Lil Wayne verse from 1998. And the shit is amazing.
Like, yeah.
It is 1,000% amazing. But that's pretty much what it is. A gang of comedians, a lot of gospel music and rap instrumentals.
Damn.
That's pretty much how I roll.
Yeah. I like it.
I wish that it was something more weird.
No, that's perfect.
No, I think that's a glimpse. Because sometimes he'll just be like, I don't know, measuring tape. I'm moving. And you're like, okay.
Uh-huh.
Next.
Thank you. And then there's also a run of slavery movie videos that I was watching. I'm working on a bit about white people who played slave masters in black struggle movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I have what I'm workshopping a joke, I have to beta test the thread of it. The theory has to hold water first before I can explore the funny.
Right.
So I have to like dig in a crate and find the most iconic white actors being horrible and figure out which one was the best.
Right. like the DJ premiere of looking for white savior and white demon portrayals in film, just dusty fingers going through the crates.
The theory of the bit is that No white person ever gets nominated for awards for playing a slave master.
Right.
Because the assumption is that there wasn't much of a transformation that had to take place.
They didn't have to work that hard.
Right.
But I'm not going to bore you with the nuts and bolts of a comedy joke that I haven't even proven it's funny yet, but that's pretty much what's in my history and a gang of Cubs highlights. So, yeah.
No, grateful for the glimpse into your progress, though, for sure. Wait, for and with MLB The Show, I used to like to play a lot of baseball games. But like over the years, I think there was about a 5-year gap where I missed a game and I came back in and the batting was so complex for me. I was like, okay, this it's left.
You've got to go back. It's like, that's why I don't fuck with 2K. I don't play NBA 2K for the same reason. I don't have time to learn this analog shooting shit. I'm sorry. And then if I try to switch it to button mode, apparently that's like having the bumpers up at a bowling alley and people clown you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm used to holding the button and releasing at the height to get my shot off.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's what I do. The show makes it hard. It's like Apple. When you update your Mac or your iPhone, you have to go through the settings to find the way your shit used to be.
Right.
To put it back like that. But no, the show is great, man. But then I also never took that 5-year gap that you're talking about. When NBA Live, when they stopped making NBA Lives, I think 07, 08-ish, somewhere in there, I stopped playing basketball games because 2K came in with the stick and I was like, fuck you. I'm not going to. No, I'll just start playing Call of Duty now. Right. And I just shifted to RPGs and stuff like that.
Right.
No, that's it.
That's why I just like NBA Street will just sort of be at the height for me. I'm like, yep, we perfected NBA Jam with Street and I can always hop back into that and still feel literate.
Ronnie Chang showed me. Like, of all of the slick shit that I've learned in my life, Ronnie Chang showed me those emulators and how to put classic Nintendo and Sega Genesis games on your MacBook for free.
Wow.
And playing with a PlayStation controller. I was like, dude, I may not need a PS5.
Right.
Yeah. I'll go back and play some old school MVP baseball from 02 with Manny Ramirez on the cover. And I'm happy.
Right.
It'll throw you off because, you know, the rosters are a little weird. Fucking David Ortiz is still playing. But fun is fun.
Right.
The Griffey baseball is where my baseball game knowledge ends. How does that stack up?
That was for Super Nintendo,
not
right?
Not good. Nintendo's always been terrible for sports.
Yeah, Nintendo has always been terrible.
Nah, I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't say terrible. They appeal to a different personality of sport fan where this is fun and more arcade style.
Yeah.
I want to control the price of the fucking hot dogs during spring training.
Exactly.
You're firing people because you don't like their call.
You can. Bro, I fired my pitching coach in the middle of the season 1 year on the show.
Because you can. Yeah. I think that
ain't working out.
Yeah. I'm definitely in that bucket of like, I didn't get on the basketball team when I thought I should have energy. And now I'm using video games to explore that and exercise those demons. So I do like the more simulator type things.
That's fair.
Roy, what is something you think is overrated?
I'm hesitant to say it. I've gone back and forth about whether or not this is what I was going to bring up.
Brilliant.
I believe that New York City pizza is overrated.
Okay.
It's floppy thin crust.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's floppy thin crust pizza. The sauce to cheese ratio is not as good as a traditional pan or a deep dish.
Okay.
I say this as a full card carrying member of Team Detroit style and Team Chicago style pizza. I know pizza is one of those serious things that Americans tend to draw the line, you know, with each other on. But I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just a basic bitch who was raised on Pizza Hut in the South and I don't know no better.
Mm.
So maybe my palate isn't refined enough. But the way people go, it's a slice of New York pizza and it's just so nothing beats a slice. I can name 5 things right now.
What
trash this slice of pizza.
I do wonder if your, like, the specific chain that was, like, your go-to growing up affects, like, what your high-end taste in pizza ends up being.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, that's a great observation. I grew up on Pizza Hut hand toss, which is the closest you'll get to a Chicago style. And also keep in mind, I came up in a time, I'm 42 for the listeners, I came up in a time where Pizza Hut was upper crust.
Yeah.
There was no delivery. Mm-hmm. Literally, Pizza Hut did not deliver. Motherfucker, you have to come here and sit the fuck down.
Right,
right.
If you want this pizza.
Drink from those frosted glass red plastic cups.
Red cups, yeah.
Yeah.
And so the rise of Domino's, the rise of Little Caesars, and, you know, Pizza Hut had to eventually give in and start delivering, so they had to make the pizzas faster to meet demand and the quality. Then it got a little shaky. But yeah, that's a fair observation, because that's what I always ran with.
Did you fuck with Pizza Hut's thin crust?
No. Yeah. No, I was never.
Pizza Hut. I that's when I diverged from Pizza Hut and went full Domino's all the time.
That's probably the only thing that me and my girl kind of, you know, there's disagreements in any relationship. And then there's the ones where, you know, wow, this is just a for real impasse.
Right.
She likes thin crust pizza.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. But then she has such an eclectic palate that she'll get all this shit on the pizza, and then these motherfuckers are rushing the pizza out the oven, so the crust on the bottom isn't sturdy enough to hold a mushroom, an onion, a green pepper, and a chive. All this, it's too much shit on it. And it's good, but this isn't for thin. You have a hand tossed palate, and I can't get that through to her. Like, you need a sturdier crust foundation to uphold all of the different flavors that your palate demands. But she just likes the flakiness of the thin crust, and it's all flimsy. It's like New York pizza with two more extra pounds of shit on the top. Mm. And I don't know.
And it's just too floppy. Yeah. It's like a wet paper towel at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And you don't want that. Yeah. I think, Jack, your thing holds up, because I remember the March Madness basketball that will come from Pizza Hut in the early 90s.
And now you demand all your pizza comes with a basketball.
With a basketball and the box to be so greasy that it can barely function as a box to hold a pizza. Like, that's definitely, because I always love a greasy ass pan pizza from Pizza Hut. But yeah, I don't think, I think over the years of just hearing people argue so much over pizza, I'm just like, man, fuck saying whatever's good. Man, if you like whatever the fuck you like, fine. But also, I'll say what I like and I'll say what I don't like. But to act like, no, it's just hard to rank at the end of the day. Like, it's just one of those things. It's a fool's errand to try and really say one is better than the other, I feel like, because it's just, no one's going to agree.
I don't know if it's still open post-COVID, but there was a Chicago-style spot in New York City in the Village, near the Village, called Emmett's. It's the only place in New York where you can get a Chicago-style deep dish pizza proper. Like, you got to wait 45 minutes for that thing. And I went and got one, and I brought it to the Comedy Cellar to eat before the show. Like, that was going to be my thing. And I got heckled out of the by other comedians.
Right.
How dare you eat Chicago style in a New York legendary establishment? I'm like, you motherfuckers don't even have pizza on the menu. You literally don't even sell it.
Right. That's what the fuck he's going to do.
Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, I think New York, I just think it's overrated.
Mm.
I'm not saying I wouldn't eat it in a drunken pinch, but stop acting like this is the measuring stick by which to measure all pizza.
Right.
I'll also eat a Little Caesar's hot and ready
in
its entirety. I have no palate. So
right.
Save your emails. I'm not going to reply.
Right. Oh, a listener said, have you ever got a crazy seasoning on your pizza at Little Caesar's?
No.
They will turn, if you ask
I'm
them,
listening.
They will turn up your hot and ready with the crazy bread seasoning. They'll be like, oh, you want us to dust it with it? And now you've got a fucking hybrid hot and ready crazy bread pizza.
Whoa. I mean, that sounds like what Domino's did to turn up their pizza a little bit.
Yeah, but they'll do it all up, like the whole fucking thing.
So
wow. Fucking battle of pizza that's, tick.
Yeah, that's why I like when Zeitgang comes through and like, you ever get it with the crazy season? I'm like, thank you so much for giving me the imagination to envision a
better
time.
You want to talk about some underrated grab-and-go pizza? It's Hungry Howie's. They're a southern chain. I think they're sprinkled around the Midwest some, but they have four flavored crusts that they peddle.
Oh, shit.
So they do the pizza, they hand toss that thing, and then they brush it with the butter cheese sauce. Oh. And now you have a butter cheese crust and your fingers taste delicious on top of it. I could talk pizza all day, dude.
Oh, I love it.
I also love a pizza chain that sounds like a pizza chain in a movie. Hungry Howie's just sounds completely made up.
Right.
And that's awesome.
Oh, also, fuck pretzel bagels from Faneuil Hall in Boston. Too thick, too big.
Well, it's no, Boston. Not a, Boston's usually very even-minded about any criticism about any of their cultural institutions, so you should be fine.
Let me stop. It's not that it's nasty. It's just it's too tall.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
You have to have a porn jaw to open wide enough. Like, you have to unhinge like a fucking boa constrictor to take a so you can never get an even bite. Because that's why when people have these fucking burgers that this is the big super duper turkey bacon beef burger and we deep fry. You can't bite it, bro. So right, you're never getting all the flavors at once.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's Meat Mountain. And you'll prove to your stepfather you are tough.
Man versus food. I'm taking on food. And then after three seasons, I'm like, fuck that shit. I want to live.
Yeah.
Let me get somebody else to host this shit.
My doctor and family begged me to stop.
I know a guy that's friends with him. He's like a really cool dude. And I wondered that the first season of Man vs. Food, how long can he do this?
Yeah.
Right.
How long? And I know they would shoot the show in like I guess like over the course of 2 months, shoot the whole thing. And then the other 10 months of the year, this guy fucking eats picture of health. He's fucking exercising.
Right.
Because he knows 2 months a year, I might die. Right.
There are moments when you'll see him mid-challenge and he'll give a, like, his eyes will meet the camera and you're like, oh, this person's drowning.
He's lost.
Yeah, and then they're like, but no, he found a way to get right back in it. But yeah, I mean, Adam, please stay safe.
How disappointed would you be if you were a fan of Man vs. Food and then you saw that guy out in the off-season? Like, come on, man, let's eat some record ribs with me. Right. And he's fucking sitting there with some kombucha and some tempeh bacon.
Right.
Whatever that fake bacon shit is. Right. Be crushed. It'd be like the time I saw Too Short in the airport holding hands with his girlfriend.
Did you really?
I'm pro love. I'm 100% pro love.
It's just not the brand.
But when you know Too Short's brand.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you just see him. And he was like carrying her bag. Like, it was cool to see.
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah,
wow, this dude's a gentleman. But then there's a part of you that goes, wait a minute, Santa's not real.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I thought you were a... But it's funny, though, too, when he's like, oh, yeah, that's all just performance art. And you're
like,
wow, Short? Okay.
But what's crazy, I could have taken a picture of Too Short holding hands, and that would have been like the biggest scandal in Black Twitter
right,
for 3 days.
How dare
Too Short be holding hands? Man, everything is a lie.
This is all bullshit. The fucking astronaut meme where it's like... Too Short is respects the ladies like always has, you know,
always is.
Roy, what's something you think is underrated?
Do I want to say therapy or do I want to say bike riding? You know what's underrated? Calling motherfuckers you ain't talked to in a long time.
Mm.
Like, that's one.
Mm-hmm.
Every week, find 15 minutes for someone you haven't talked to in a year.
I've got a list like 15. Long.
I'm sorry to get deep like that.
No.
Seriously, like that's where I am. And it's probably been the coolest thing to just talk and just reconnect with people and, you know, just try to be some degree of human, if you will. I know it's a hassle. I know it's a pain in the ass. So do it while you do other things.
Right.
Like, that's my thing while I'm playing something brainless, you know, doing PlayStation or whatever. Or if I'm at the park watching my boy, he's out there with his friend. So all I have to do is look at him and make sure he's not snatched or hurt.
Right.
Right.
So that's the perfect time to call an old classmate from somewhere. And so, you know, that's the type of stuff that I like to do. And I'm finally realizing, oh, wow, this is meaningful and life is precious.
Yeah. Especially, yeah, like being locked down and stuff and not really having the same sort of social connections. It's funny, too, because there are times I would get a call from somebody who was doing that to me. They're like, oh, I'm gonna hit Miles up. And I'll see a name come up like, fuck, I haven't talked to this person in fucking a year. And I was like sweating almost because you're like, fuck, what am I going to say? Like, what the fuck? We don't have to have this awkward conversation.
What do they want from me?
And then you pick up and it's like we left off for exactly where we were, however long ago it was. And we spoke for 40 minutes straight because it was so effortless. Yeah. And that was one of those moments too. I was like, fuck, man, I'm out here creating stress about this when it's actually such a, like, rejuvenating thing to even begin talking to your friends again, or even people, like you're saying, that you haven't spoken to in a while.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, be careful. Some of them motherfuckers want money. Sorry.
Luckily, this person had more money than me. So I was like, I'll ask them for money.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm going to try and just listening to you talk. The next time I'm thinking of interacting with a bunch of people I don't know, like on Twitter, like posting something on Twitter, reading a bunch of tweets, I'm going to call somebody I do know or used to know. Because, it definitely gives you life as opposed to slowly sapping your will to live.
Yeah.
Like Twitter does sometimes. All right, let's take a quick break and we're going to be right back to talk some news.
Zeit gang, customers are rushing to your store, but do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it, you know, like a literal POS? Well, you need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Connect with customers in-line and online. Look, you want to use TikTok? Well, guess what? They have plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns on platforms just like that. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Now, I was looking at Shopify.com, and I'm trying to get some answers. Let's say, I had a bustling retail business, and I need, you know, maybe some hardware to be able to sell my wares on the street, take credit card payments, whatever. And I know Shopify is easy to use. Half the time I buy something online, I'm like, oh, yep, they're using Shopify. And if you need to learn more, check out their website. It's super easy to navigate, whether you have questions about how you can optimize your inventory or, again, looking for hardware to make sales easier. Shopify.com has all of that. Just go there. Check it out. So sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/TDZ, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/TDZ to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/TDZ.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success.
Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back, and we've had a day and a half of reactions to the Chauvin verdict, and also as the verdict was coming in, the police in Columbus, Ohio, killed another black child, like within moments of the verdict being read out loud. So just a mix of horrible shit. White supremacy all over the place. But yeah, it was a relief to, and also kind of upsetting that it was such a relief that they got it right. But at the same time, there's just like so much shit on display. Nancy Pelosi just not knowing what.
Oh, God, Nancy.
She basically said, I mean, for people who don't know, she said, thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life.
Your life.
For right. this to happen.
Floyd's girlfriend came out and said something similar not too long after that. Right. I can't remember where she said it, but like, I'm hoping that they just poorly worded their statement.
Right.
That, because George Floyd didn't wake up that morning, I'm going to die for the culture.
Yep.
No. George Floyd woke up to right. go mind his fucking business. And regardless of what he was under suspicion of, he didn't deserve to die.
No.
Period.
To the Nancy Pelosi thing, I don't think it was poorly worded. I think that really underlined just sort of how the Democrats move, which is just sort of like, you know, it was, essentially she was saying it's going to take a lot more bodies for us right. to give a fuck, because she's sort of she's connecting the fact that George Floyd had to die on video in order for them to muster the semblance of courage to begin to address this like form of shitty policing that we have. And it's almost as if like it absolves them of responsibility as legislators to say, thank you, George Floyd, because like you helped push things a little bit more than like we were willing to as politicians too.
Yay, we got one. And right. all it took was video evidence, a whole fucking summer of uprisings and movements, and the fucking police chief himself testifying. And right. we got him. And you right. know what? He still might not only get 7 or 8 years.
Right.
That's the other thing that's wild, is that first you march for transparency. Then you march for cameras. Then you march for arrests. Next, you have to march to try and get sentences.
Yep.
And I think that's the thing that's really infuriating, is that when you look at what happened, you know, with the Chauvin verdict, and then to immediately see what happened in Columbus, Ohio, it's a reminder that there isn't a lot that you should be celebrating
right.
just yet.
Yeah, because the system is still the same regardless, and the way we are defining crime and safety is still the same, and police is still the same. And it just, it sucks to just think that like a lot of the sentiment, especially from the media, like Kristen Bell, who's like, finally, we can breathe a sigh of relief. Something right happened today. Like this idea that like, hooray, we won. That's right. Not nobody fucking won. And when I feel like, again, because the media, for people who are just tuning into CNN or MSNBC or anything like that, it should, the what they should be saying is, it is now so painfully clear that our system isn't just ill-equipped to solve this problem. It, in fact, itself is the problem.
Right.
And this is why it's so exhausting, because it has been so painfully clear for a really long time now. And like you're saying, Roy, the only reason this happened is because the whole thing was on tape. The whole thing was on tape. Otherwise, we would have had to put that on the pile of many other deaths that have occurred that unfortunately were not captured in HD for the entirety of someone's life ending. And that's what's really fucked up.
The Minneapolis Police Department report on the murder that went around, like a lot of people were reposting this, but it is just wild to look at it. Like it just describes it. Man dies after medical incident during police interaction. Like literally so many things had to go right. Like that, if that video didn't exist, that none of this happens. It
that's
just
that.
Gets swept under the
that's
rug.
That.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. One down, three to go. So, you know, that's kind of how I look at it. I didn't watch any of the coverage. Like I know you work at a Daily Show and you're supposed to like watch the news and all of that stuff, but I was like, I think Trevor's got this one. Yeah. I'm not watching this one to try and figure out any indignation or outrage or anything that I can put together. That's the one thing that I do love about being a correspondent, is that if I want to, I can just fucking unplug from the horror of today and focus my attentions on the solutions. What's happening to change this? What are people doing? Because there's comedy in the solutions, because there's optimism.
Right.
So if there's optimism, then there's an opportunity to find a joke or two. So for me, I'd rather swim in those waters and do a ride along with Klepper about police bias, or walk the streets of Chicago on the South Side to show that Black people actually do care about Black on Black violence. Like, to me, that's more where my head starts to turn, you know, and looking at stuff, you know, like, the one thing I have been clocking is, I think it's 34 states now that are starting to put anti-protest laws on the books and are attaching it to, I mean, you all can fact check this, but I think they're basically, you won't be eligible for student loans and federal grants and
unemployment benefits, food stamps, public housing. Yeah. Like in Florida, they'll just say, they'll take all your shit away for trying to advocate for yourself. No, it's true. And I think even to your point, like the segment that you did going to Chicago with that group of people who were intervening in neighborhoods, that the point was clear in that it's not about the idea of that people want to be engaging in criminality. It's that there isn't support. There are no options. And the way we are looking at how we keep people safe isn't because we have more armed goons on the street. It's because we're able to provide people opportunities to live as they deserve to have opportunity and not to resort to these other kinds of things. And it's that simple, but we're still sort of like locked in this mentality of like, well, what are we going to stop spending money on these like vests and shit? Like, yeah, exactly. But we're, I think just societally, we're not able to see like, no, you see, we have to turn this whole industry off to be able to like take all that revenue or capital and move it into something that's actually restorative. And we're just unfortunately don't have the imagination for that still, at least at a critical mass level.
Yeah. That Columbus cop who, you know, murdered a 15-year-old girl, shot her four times in an altercation that like could it with courage and like willingness to put themselves like slightly in harm's way, like could have been like that's the thing that frustrates me, is that the white supremacists like Tucker Carlson, and they always paint the police as like courageous and putting their body in harm's way to do their job. And like, that's not what you see when you actually see the details. You see them standing 10 feet away and firing four shots at a child to stop them instead of, you know, just jumping in there.
Yeah.
I think that there's this weird collective grouping of cops that other jobs don't get. You know, it's like no matter what, they're all heroes and good, even though these are, there's clearly a systemic issue. But nope, we cannot acknowledge that because the good outweighs the bad. Well, right. How do you measure bad?
Right.
Is that that's, and I think that's the question that, you know, collectively people refuse to ask, which is why the same day that a cop is convicted of killing someone on tape, you also have Back the Blue trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
Everybody's picked a team, and they're, and common decency is the thing that should always be looked at first before you pick a side.
Yeah.
We're so dug in.
And while, you know, it's if it's not George Floyd and it, or Breonna Taylor, who still waiting to see any form of accountability there. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to be Micaiah Bryant. And that's why, you know, it the idea that we can reform a system like this is just so absurd. Like, you don't reform a malignant tumor. You remove it. You don't figure out how to do solutions. Like, let's fund the tumor less. No, you need to get rid of it. If we can acknowledge what it's doing and how insidious it is, then it's incumbent on us to be responsible enough to look at it objectively. Like, I think we actually have to rethink that. But again, that's a huge shift. And that's why now the white supremacy has to now rally around itself in the forms, as you're saying, 34 states have introduced 81 anti-protest bills in 2021 in this legislative session. That's more than twice as many as any other year. And we're only in April. So that's the response now, is to say, OK, because the logic for them is, well, the reason Derek Chauvin went to jail is because the uprisings over the summer created an angry mob, which is now bullying the country into sacrificing well-intentioned police officers to the wolves, to the outrage community. And therefore, their strategy is now say, well, then we have to take away the ability to protest in this way.
That's literally what Tucker Carlson said, right?
Yeah, that was Tucker's logic last night. Yeah. And then Candace Owens had to come on to Yes And That in a wonderful improv scene. It was just really some other shit. And like, you know, you look at what's happening, like in Oklahoma and Iowa, they're passing bills to grant immunity to drivers whose vehicles strike and injure protesters in public streets. You know, there's in Indiana, there's a proposal saying if you're convicted of unlawful assembly, you can't be employed by the state. You can't hold office. There's a Minnesota bill that's on the books that they're trying to get passed that says if you're convicted of this kind of protesting, you won't get loans or unemployment or housing. So it's clearly targeted at people of color and working people and people who are most likely to want to get out and advocate for themselves. Watching this all ebb and flow.
Which is why all of those down the ballot elections matter. Mm-hmm. That's why all of that fixation on presidential stuff really doesn't do it justice in terms of exactly what's going on in the world, in terms of the things that affect you, you know, on the day to day.
Right. Yeah. And this is, while we're, I think, again, looking at now, just always thinking of having the federal things at the top of mind, not realizing that it's all the state legislative and municipality legislators that are the ones that are truly like shaping what your day-to-day actual experience is, like the people in the community you're in is by those people. And it's just a shame now to see like how many also police chiefs are saying like, that it shows that the legal system works. Like that's been the sort of through line. And it's like,
Alex Villanueva, the head of the LA Sheriff Department came through with the, see, we told you justice works. And
there's a gang problem in your department.
In your department,
there are sheriff's gangs, fool, and the reporter who's been reporting on it has to wear a bulletproof vest now because she's getting death threats because she bothered to report on these gangs that exist in the sheriff's department.
Yeah, Cerise Castle, who was on Daily Zeitgeist a couple weeks ago, she also went to a press conference with her credentials and was arrested for not having her credentials by the sheriff's department detained and then let go. But, you know, the message was clear.
Just harassment.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I think it's indicative and what they mean. Because a lot of statements too from police unions like, well, policing as we know it is on the line. Yeah, good.
What? I mean, that's.
But let's be real. Like, is it? Is there the will of the leadership in this country to change it like that? TBD.
All right, let's take another quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about Quibi.
Segway.
Segway.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. And speaking of things that bite, I don't know, Quick Bites. Quibi is back.
I'm just bringing this up because it's really about what Quibi cost and then what they just sold everything for. Because Roku, who makes like TV, you know, Roku and all those little adapter sticks and all that shit, they bought all of the Quibi content. and they're like sort of repurposing it as Roku Originals, and they're making their own like streaming content or whatever. But the reason I was like reading about it, because this was announced back in January that Roku might come through with it. Quibi cost $1.75 billion. Okay.
That's how much they put into production.
That's what they've been spending.
That's how much they raised to get Quibi completed, launched off the ground, marketed everything. $1.75 billion. Okay. And this shit only lasted a couple months. The Wall Street Journal, there's a thing saying they sold it to Roku, quote, for significantly less than $100 million. So let's assume that's what, $60 million? That feels like significantly.
It's
got
to come back because Roku trying to flip that hundo.
Right. And now that's a 95% loss for Quibi. I just love that.
I can dig it.
I just love that shit. 1.75. Like, yeah. Fuck, man, will you pay 50 for it? I don't know, man, please.
I think that Quibi has an opportunity to come back because it was an app that was for the commuter and for people in the office sneaking and streaming at their desk. Commuting went away, in-office work went away. Mm-hmm. So you're dead. Then they had that stupid tech thing where you couldn't watch the shit on a laptop or a TV.
Perfect.
And by the time they lifted that embargo, it was too late. Motherfuckers was on life support. So, you know, it was done deal. Vaccines flowing. What did Joe Biden say this week? 200 million got the shot. Mm-hmm. Or 200 million shots. I don't. You know what? Let me take that back. Maybe they might be padding the stats over there. Because 200 shots, it's technically 100 vaccinated. Because you get two shots, so you counting both shots. Joe Biden. Anyway, motherfuckers are going back outside again. So if people are going back outside again, then I think that there's a chance that Quibi could come back. Also, the other thing that's happened in the same time, pretty much every streamer has raised their price or is planning to raise their price. And Quibi has enough star power. The only thing I watched on Quibi was Chrissy Teigen's courtroom show because, you know, I kind of like her. She's cool. And then there was a movie. They had like a movie that was split up into like 7 minute parts. And I was like, I made it through 30 minutes of that. And like, that was it. Like, I didn't really watch anything else over there. So
yeah.
I think if they come back cheap and they come back with names, they have a chance.
But I think that's the problem is they wasted all that money and they sold all the IP. So I don't know what happens. Katzenberg is going to have to, I don't know, he'll just do another round of fundraising to try and get all that money going. But yeah, it was interesting because I think the one thing that they did have was like the aspect ratio of going from vertical to horizontal and stuff. And that would give you new things. I think that was legitimately an interesting thing. But yeah, to your point, like people also want to watch shit on a computer or a TV or whatever. And when you have stars you're used to seeing on that format.
All right, I rotate my phone. I can see more of the room that the actors are talking in. That, to me, was like, okay, that's cool, but it still boils down to what's the story on the screen.
It's like a porn animation.
But it rotates, Roy.
Is it good? Yeah, yeah. Oh, I can see you around the corner now.
It's a bigger conference room than I thought.
That part was cool, but I root for it to do well because the more places there are for content stories to be told, the more opportunities I have to get a check.
Exactly.
I've always been rooting for it. There's so many talented people who are getting paid, who are, you know, drinking up that $1.75 billion. It is also such a perfect example of like executive overreach and just putting one idea an executive had before any of the many, many things that you have to do to make something work. They were like, well, people like short stuff. And then, you know, meanwhile, YouTube is trending longer and longer, and Netflix, like the thing people are addicted to is like streaming shows that like keep you glued to your TV until 5 a.m. Like, it was just, I remember that like when the web, like when putting content online first started, people were like, it's got to be 30 seconds or less, or else nobody's going to watch it. And like, they just stopped thinking about it at that point. They were like, all right, we gotta make it bite-sized content for anybody to consume it in this fast-paced world. And people are like, no, we want relief from right. this fast-paced world.
The thing that's interesting about Quibi and Netflix, for that matter, a lot of the shows are written to deliberately cliffhang. So it's never supposed, even the comedies like that are kind of serialized, they deliberately want you to hit next episode. So you just, you're fucking rat pushing the cocaine button in that cage.
Right.
So it's like, that's what they want. But Quibi's going to need a flagship hit, you know?
Right.
You know, and that's difficult, especially at a time now where a lot of the sites are like, they're just basically remixing existing IP.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like pretty much every streaming site is like, what do we have that we already own? Fuck it. Do a new one.
Right. Yeah.
Build on that for cheap and then start doing new ideas. So, you know, I don't know. But if they're going to come back, they're going to need content. So if you're listening from Quibi, get at me.
Or Roku, whoever.
I would love to see Roku like just take off as like suddenly a really successful streaming platform that like is up there with Netflix and Quibi, like all the big ass executives who stake their career on Quibi are just, you know.
Shit bricks. Yeah, somebody has to get fired.
Yeah, see, get Roy a check. Call it, you know, branded as Royku. You know what I mean?
There you go.
I will accept that.
There's a promo materials right there.
Well, let's go from really bad ideas to really bad ideas. These are some frat sickles that Natty Light is creating. I don't know. I mean, you guys tell me what you think. So Natural Light has been, like when I was in college, that was the beer of choice because it was like $4 for a 30-pack. And they were just like trying to give it away, basically. And it tasted bad, but like not so bad that it didn't get you drunk. And since then, they've apparently had some meetings where they're like, what if we did like a fruity beer that like tasted
youth
like
culture,
Kool-Aid?
Youth culture. Don't, this ain't your uncle's beer.
Yeah.
It's your nanny's beer now.
I've also been on some RFPs from Natty Light where they're like trying to like brand themselves in an ironic way. It's
right.
Ugly. It's real weird.
And they had some weird like PR campaigns for like internships and things like that. But
yeah,
their first thing was like this Natter Days shit. There's like their fruity beer that has strawberry lemonade or pineapple lemonade. It's like, okay, fine, whatever. I guess it's popular enough. I've never had it. It sounds like a better idea than those like sweet tea Truly seltzers, which I've had one of and immediately thought I was being poisoned. and now they have turned this into an 8% ABV popsicle, which sounds like a dangerous development.
I mean, I guess, yeah. I mean, anytime you make alcohol easy to consume and anytime you make alcohol fun to consume.
Yeah.
Like stupid bendy straws or those long New Orleans hurricane cups that look like a fucking long ass water air traffic control tower, the long necks.
Right.
You're gonna get into some trouble.
Right.
Like you're gonna get into some trouble.
Yeah.
There was Four Loko. Beforehand, Four Loko got everybody off the crazy colors, but you know, like I came up with like Mad Dog 2020 and all of that shit and all of that. Like, there's
Bart James,
yeah, it's just like, oh, it's just fruity, or it's St. Ives, the little fruity cooler cocktail joints, or whatever. Isn't Natty Light like PBR's more refined cousin that like finished community college and is like, you know. A well-respected beer, but also a beer that exudes shots.
right.
Yes. Yeah. I would. I don't know that it finished community college necessarily, but
it definitely but lied it about community college.
Yeah, it definitely told their parents that they went.
They
to
were
community
going to college, and didn't tell their parents they were just sleeping in the car of a grocery store near the campus during class, and then would drive back and say class was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and PBR told him so and said, you should have never lied. You should have just never went.
Right.
What do you know?
These are made Like they might have had a like excess packaging at the popsicle factory. Like these look exactly like things that my 3-year-old and 4-year-old would be right. So hyped to get their hands on.
Oh yeah, this is right up there with candy cigarettes.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like, the old school.
How quickly
candy cigarettes still gave you cancer.
What's the over under on stories where a bunch of kids have found their kids natter day, their parents natter day's popsicles and got just bent out of shape off of them? Like, I feel like it's very quick. Cause when looking at it, I had to look very closely to be like, where does it say this is alcohol? Like when you look at the packaging, but yeah, like you're saying, Roy, making it easier to consume, I think is like this, like, cause now we're going back to childhood. Where the popsicle is like, yes, I got a popsicle. And now we're adding alcohol to that experience. I don't know if there's another level that will inspire more childlike excitement than the popsicle.
They look like the squeezable yogurt tubes I give my boy.
Yes, right. Yeah, the Go-Gurts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this shit looks like Go-Gurt. And I don't want him having some Natty Light. Sending him out the door to 4-year-old pre-K. That's not good.
Like, Mr. Wood, we found something in your child's lunchbox just filled to the brim with Natter Day's popsicles. Wait, what?
Those Go-Gurts?
Yeah.
Also, like, people aren't going to actually freeze these. I mean, like, responsible people will freeze these, but this just gives you a faster way to drink Natter Day's, I'm assuming, and get drunk off of Natter Day's.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how cool you look pulling one of these out of the cooler. That's a Natter Day, bro. Yeah.
Pass me a popsicle.
Check the meat on the grill. Are you grilling meat? Who wants a popsicle, boy?
Frat Brothers sucking on popsicles is a funny image to me.
Just replace all these party scenes with just frat boys just eating these popsicles and shit.
Yeah.
You're going to do a popsicle stand?
Doing the linking arms thing, but just sucking on a popsicle for like 45 seconds.
Them and sit on them and put them up their ass. Like there would be some sort of ass shot remix with a pop. Like whatever the beer funnel, what was that when people were dying a couple years ago?
Butt chugging?
Yeah, butt chugging. This will be the new butt chugging.
Oh, right. It's just make a frozen butt plug. Like by like melting together like 50 of them things and be like, can you handle the mega plug of Natter Day's? And you're like, oh my God. Yeah.
My insides are freezing.
Like, that's the point, bro.
Maybe this will bring back Bros Ice and Bros though, which is,
I feel like we've just given someone, you should add a disclaimer right there because I feel like we just gave someone an idea and they're going to take that to the front house.
Yeah. Immediately. Daily Zeitgeist is not responsible for any
for
any anal ingestion
rectal consumption of this icicle.
Rectal consumption. All right, let's talk about old people fashion. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal that's my source for all fashion news is the Wall Street Journal. But this article is kind of fun. It's like a fashion blogger talking about this trend where like a lot of fashion photographers and like Instagrams are like there are these really popular feeds of just old person fashion, but like the shit is like really cool looking, like the stuff the old people are wearing in these pictures. And you know, the theory is basically that they are picking the coolest shit from their archive of like decades old clothes and just authentically wearing whatever, you know, brings them joy. And they're like ignoring whatever, you know, young people are chasing and just creating these wild ass mixes of color. Yeah. Yeah. And like ignoring that, like makes them, it's like the Marge Simpson scene where she's like, I'm so not cool that maybe I am cool. And the kids are like, nah, I think that has finally come true for the elderly.
Is this like, because I've also seen accounts where clearly somebody's just dressing up a grandparent in their own clothes and being like, yo, hypebeast grandpa with the Supreme drip, which is like, okay, like I see the novelty of that. But like, are these, so you're just saying these are the most swagged out elderly people legitimately digging into their own fashions?
That's
I'm dubious sometimes when I
that's
see
the claim. the right, that these are all old people who they just caught in the wild wearing dope shit.
Okay. It gives us hope. Isn't that the point? Is that the point?
Yeah. Yeah. These?
I mean, I'm not really a fashion guy. Like, I just kind of, I don't really care about clothes until it's time to be on television, which right. is probably mm-hmm. not the best time to be scrambling.
5 seconds before.
Putting shit together.
Yeah.
I literally emailed your producer 20 minutes before this show began. And I said, hey, man, is this video or fucking audio? Do I have to wear a shirt for this shit? How do I need to brush my hair? Like, that's right. That's where I am now.
Yeah.
The pictures are dope. I mean, the people look great. And it also really, really shows, like, that I think these old people know that, like, they're just not like, oh, you caught me in my magenta and aquamarine blazer. Right.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're dressing
you
up.
You knew you was fly when you left the fucking house.
Oh, for
right,
sure.
Right, right.
You didn't know you were getting a picture taken.
Right. But old people are the ones who will, like, dress up for a flight, while, you know, right. younger people are the ones you're more likely to see with socks and sweatpants on.
Yeah. I remember my grandfather, he wore a suit. There was this burger place on Crenshaw called Eat a Burger. And it was designed like a 50s car hop place. And it was really cool. And everybody was like, oh, Eat a Burger's opening up. This motherfucker wore a suit to go get a burger when I was a kid. And I remember being like, what the fuck? And I think there is just this generational thing where I'm like you, Roy, where I wear the same version of that same outfit pretty much infinitely, where I don't have it in me. I don't have the mind to dress up for things as much as I see, you know, I guess other people who respect going out or something. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I know a lot of that. It's old habits from stand-up comedy and places that didn't demand that I dress up. So there's that. But I don't know. Good fashion, I respect it enough to know that I don't have the attention span required to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
You have to shop at a level that I don't have the time for. And then you have to put your outfit together and exit it with this... I just don't have the time to think, man.
For you, what's the highest point of fashion for you personally, Roy? That you, when you say, oh, shit, I'm dressing up today.
When we went to the Emmys, I got a custom tuxedo.
Okay. That's fair. I mean,
When the Daily Show was nominated that time, I got a really nice tuxedo from the homie Rich Fresh.
Nice.
That's probably where I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to get right for this.
Right.
My first hour special, bro, I bought all that shit in Macy's.
There you go.
Like, it wasn't like everybody else I know. I mean, custom, you get the drip, and then I get the shoes from Italy, and then I get my socks from Vancouver.
Yeah. Vancouver has the best
Macy's.
Socks.
Yeah. I did it. Macy's on 34th. I got all that shit between two floors.
There you go.
Cool outfit.
Socks from Vancouver.
The best outfits in this article are this elderly couple who own a laundromat and like put together these amazing outfits using shit their clients leave behind. But that is definitely one where you can tell that they've got they have like the most just cutting edge fashion sensibility, or they have like a consultant. But like the big thing that they're doing is most laundromats are also tailoring locations, and they're tailoring all the fits to like look really good on them, which that's the key, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty dope, though. All right, real quick, speaking of award shows, I do want to talk about the plan for this year's Oscars. I hadn't really heard of this, but so they're being helmed by Steven Soderbergh, the guy who made Contagion. So the pandemic Oscars are being made by the guy who made Contagion. They're saying it won't feel like a TV award show. It will feel like you're watching a movie. The presenters will be playing versions of themselves working from scripts, which that's true of all award shows, I guess.
I wish I would get nominated for a fucking award, and then the award show tells me I got to do all of this extra goofy shit to lose.
Right.
Then lose.
So you're playing character. Who, yeah, exactly. It's just very strange. Like, so it seems like this idea was approved by somebody who knew that Soderbergh had made like Ocean's 11 and Contagion, like all his successful commercial movies, and wasn't aware of like all the really experimental shit that he's made that like audiences were like, no thanks. Like Full Frontal, a lot of people haven't seen that. That's like,
got, I missed that
Julia
one.
Roberts, and yeah, everybody missed that one, but it's very strange, experimental, like 14 different characters, nothing really makes sense. And he, yeah, it's a, he's just going very like in a very strange direction with this. That this is the first Oscars I'm going to watch just because for the
nightmare watching aspect.
Yeah, for the like this is going, this could be totally fucking off the rails.
I think it's
going
to be either all good or all bad. Like right. It's either going to work and you're like, fuck. Man, that I guess shooting it in 24 frames per second really did give us some cinematic feel, or it's just going to be like pretty fun.
Anything's better than seeing 9 people in the Zoom chat and 8 of them are sad
right.
and
right.
there's one person grinning.
Right. Like holding a
they
face.
They got
like,
the trophy. Yeah, it's them. Like,
That's what I like, that there's no, so, and this one has absolutely no Zoom anything, right? Like,
no,
that's
nobody,
the whole point of this one.
He, when he agreed to do it, which is kind of a weird move for the guy who made Contagion, like researched all pandemics and shit, he said, I will do this if it's agreed that there are going to be absolutely no people allowed on Zoom. And they agreed to that. And so, yeah, they did create hubs for people in like Europe to go to. So that they wouldn't kill Anthony Hopkins.
Hubs.
Yeah, there's like a UK hub and other European
UK
hub.
UK Oscar distribution yes. hub.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess it's a seemed like a lot of trouble to go through to not give black movies the rewards they deserve. All right,
yeah.
We'll see.
It will. Yeah, we will see. The last time they tried to go high concept and like gave the Oscars over to like a visionary, it was a real disaster.
Like, tell you now, ain't no black movies gonna win now, because that Chauvin trial, they the like, black people, we gave you your yep. W.
The moral there licensing will continue.
Right.
You get no trophies this month. Sorry about that. I'm a pessimist.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to see it, I mean, again, with the drama of a presenter being like, I don't know about this presentation, and I'm going to say what? And the Oscar goes to, or how do you mean to deliver that
right.
line, Stephen? Like, what is that?
How, like, what is the character they're playing that is not just them delivering an award speech? Like, is there going to be like a spy theme where like they're,
or these people are just so, you know, thirsty to perform again that there's like, okay, we're going to format it so right. the whole thing is a performance,
right.
baby.
Right.
Because mm-hmm. we haven't been able to get out there and just stretch our wings. Trust me, if you come to this, you will have to perform if you participate in these Oscars.
Now, I need you to act like you just lost. Right. Now, act like you just won.
Yes.
It's like, no.
All right. And you lost. So that was just an exercise.
Yeah, please leave.
All right. Roy, it's been such a pleasure having you, man. Where can people find you, follow you, hear you?
The podcast is Roy's Job Fair.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just start there, and you can find me everywhere else if you find me in that spot.
Another lesser daily show than the Daily Zeitgeist you're involved with, I hear.
Oh, yeah. And Daily Show at 11 o'clock, weeknights at 11.
Uh-huh. And is there a tweet or some of the work of social media you've been enjoying?
You know whose Twitter I like? I like LeVar Burton, because LeVar Burton is coming through. They finally fucking going to give him a chance to host Jeopardy so he can ascend to the job that is right for him.
Did they give it to him?
So, well, he's in the next batch of guest hosts. I'll let you cover that on tomorrow's
episode. Yeah, yeah. He absolutely deserves it.
I knew we've done a lot. We've done a lot here.
Yeah.
Miles, where can people find you? What's tweet you've been enjoying?
Twitter, Instagram, at Miles of Gray. Also, 420 Day Fiancé, that podcast, if you want to talk 90 Day. Where I'll be at. Some tweets that I like. First one is from @Reductress saying, "Promise me you'll at least think about it," says mom about some bullshit, which really does feel like, it's like, yeah, huh? Yeah, yeah, I'll think about it. Yeah, yeah. More on that later. And then another one is from this guy, Scott Seiss, this comedian. He's been doing, like, somebody retweeted these videos that he does on TikTok where he's using the BGC drama format where the song plays, but it's like this dude who works at IKEA. So I'm just going to play a couple of them for you because it captures the rage of someone who has to work in retail so
that
perfectly.
Was mine. Yeah, that was mine too.
Working hard or hardly working? I'm hardly laughing. I'm already at work. I don't have time for a second job pretending you're funny. Tell me something I don't hear every day. Like, thank you. You should open up more registers. And who's going to work them? You think I'm the only one ringing you up because I called dibs? I'm myself, you saying you want to apply. Well, you see, we're shorthanded. Where's your resume?
Those are so good, so man. They capture it so well, and I love the use of that format because normally it's just for other shit. But yes, shout out to Scott Seiss.
Yeah, that was mine. Another one I liked is Mike Ginn tweeted, "It's crazy car insurance companies try to make you call the police after any accident. Yeah, sorry about the fender bender. Mine sticking around until two wheezing psychos with guns show up." You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and our website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Hello. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we think you should go check out. Miles, what song is your recommendation for today?
Just a nice little sample-based hip-hop, a little futuristic, a little bit of flavor. This is from Med and Blue, who are on the production. And on the vocals, you have Madlib and Anderson .Paak. And it's called The Strip. And it's just got a nice, you know, futuristic vibe to it, but still is maintaining, like, that sort of old-school sample style. So check this one out. It's a really fantastic track. It's called The Strip.
Dope. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for this morning. We're back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.